This is Stand to Reasons, hashtag STR Ask Podcast with Amy Hall and Greg Kokel. And this is where we answer your questions. You send them on Twitter or you send them through our website with the hashtag STR Ask, and then we respond and hopefully you'll find it helpful.
Hey, I have a question about that, Amy.
Sure.
Hashtag STR, and then is ask a separate word?
It's
or is
all
there space
one word.
Or it doesn't? Okay, so
great,
that's the
point.
Way it has
yes.
to be.
Yes, all one word. And you don't even have to, if you're on Twitter, you don't even have to reply to STR tweets or anything. As long as you put the hashtag in there, it will show up for me and I will be able to put that into the queue.
You mean the whole moniker, hashtag STR.
Hashtag STR ask, one word.
Yeah, because that's what you're searching. Okay.
Exactly. So let's start with a question from Christine. How can a married man evangelize to single, unsaved women wisely? To evangelize, we typically need to build a relationship, but is it wise to build relationships with the opposite sex in order to witness to them about Jesus? What is the appropriate and wise thing to do when dealing with the opposite sex?
Well, I think this is a fair question and depends on the individual and the individual situation. I think the idea of having to build a relationship in order to share Christ with someone is way overblown, okay? I think the point of saying that, there's actually two points. One of them is if you are in a certain sense a brief or temporary encounter with someone, like, for example, when I go on the airplane, I don't want to treat someone that I begin sharing Christ with as if they're simply an object to be saved. I want to treat them in a generous, gracious fashion as a valuable human being. I want to engage them that way and not just pummel them with religious slogans. Okay, and we've talked about this before. And there's a section, by the way, in the end of Tactics where I talk about an experience my wife and I had as we sat in the seat in an airplane coming back from Wisconsin, and there was a dear, precious brother in Christ who had actually purchased a middle seat on purpose so he'd have a victim on either side of him. And I know this from overhearing the conversations. He takes these trips to meet as many people as he can to witness. But he did a lot of things good, and he made some mistakes too, okay? So this is one thing we want to avoid. So it doesn't look like we are just gospel fodder, so to speak, you know? And so this is where I think the relational element of a conversation is really important. And by employing the tactical game plan, meeting someone, being friendly with them, drawing them out with questions to find out more about them and their own view, shows an interest in them and is relational by nature. So in that sense, the relationship issue is really good. Now, a lot of people are not so inclined to strike up conversations with strangers. And so this is where the relational or friendship evangelism takes on a different look. And that is what we try to do is build longer-term relationships with people who are in our circle of friends or acquaintances or family and nurture those relationships while we're graciously trying to communicate the gospel or aspects of it over time with them. Okay, so those are the kind of relational elements that I think are important. In the first case, I don't think there's any liability with a male sharing with a female. You know, these are public encounters. They're casual encounters. There's a waitress at the table. There's someone sitting next to you on the airplane or whatever. And in the grocery store, I don't know where these things happen. They happen in all kinds of places if we're alert for them. And this is one thing a good ambassador is. It's the number one thing on the Ambassador's Creed, which, by the way, I read every single month. I just read it again for the month of May. And it's right at the very end of the tactics book. So we're ready. And we just do what we can with the opportunities that we have. There should be no difficulty in those, I think, with the so-called sexual component. Longer-term relationships are different, and we just have to be careful about that. If what we're doing is we're a youth leader and we're meeting privately with a young lady to witness to her and build that relationship, well, that's stupid. All right. And this is where I think common sense should rule. These things are not hard. You may even have policies in your organization. We're not going to have these kind of trysts where other people are not present. Okay? Don't meet alone with members of the opposite sex that are under your spiritual authority. It's just not wise. Okay? Now, working with colleagues or something, well, that's, in my view, it's a little bit different, but you're not witnessing then because you're both Christians. But wisdom also has to be expressed there. But there is a relational aspect that's valuable and important to all circumstances of engaging people for Christ, but those so-called relationships can be established very quickly. That is a friendly atmosphere in which you can engage somebody in a friendly way. And the tactical game plan is perfectly suited for that kind of thing. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, get the book Tactics. That's all I can tell you. Go to Amazon or go to Stand to Reason, type in Tactics, buy it. You'll be glad you did.
I think that distinction between the two kinds of relationships, one where you're just meeting them on the street or you're on a plane or even if you're at your work. If you're at your workplace, you will have work relationships with various people there, and you'll have conversations with them. So that's one thing. But if you're purposely developing relationship outside of a situation that's temporary, like even including work, I think one simple thing you can do is just include your spouse in it. If you want to develop a relationship as a family with an unsaved young woman, invite her to your house to have dinner with you and your wife. And you can both do that together as a couple. I think that is perfectly legitimate. But I do think there's a lot of danger in just saying that you are going to go out and develop a relationship outside of a normal situation where you would develop a relationship, such as a workplace.
Yeah. Think of Rosaria Butterfield. Did I say her name right there? Rosaria. Oh, cry out. Okay, Rosaria.
Someday you'll get it, Greg.
Okay, well, I thought it's like Rosary, I-A, but Rosaria. Okay, but she was a lesbian who was befriended by a pastor and his wife. And over the course of 2 years, just their relationship growing the way it was, not even highly polemical, had a radical influence on her. Now she writes extensively in that field as a Christian. But yeah, that's good. Or bring, you know, another coworker or another Christian, as long as you're not ganging up on somebody. Remember, Jesus sent the disciples out in pairs for a reason. So as long as another person is involved, another party that can keep an eye on things and on you. And just the fact that there's more people there changes the dynamic of that environment so it's not so intimate.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, Greg, that's what I was thinking in terms of the dynamic. Not even necessarily that you're afraid you might do something bad. That's, you know, that the man could be totally trustworthy, but it does change the dynamic. And then everything is understood that this is not a situation that could get confusing for her or whatever. So I think in terms of the dynamic, rather than thinking in terms of, oh, I need someone to protect me from myself, which there could be some of that too, but still.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So here's a question from Think McFly. What's the best way to respond to gay-affirming relatives who are Christians that say there's nothing wrong with consensual romantic same-sex relationships? They basically say that love is love.
Whoa. Okay, well, my first question that came to mind is, and the first two questions, explain to me what you're getting at here. That's what do you mean by that? What are you getting at? Are you saying that, no, just tell me, let them do the talking. And essentially, I suspect is, well, as long as we love each other, then this is about being loving. Christianity is about loving. And so this is our expression of love. And so if we are in love, then we can be sexually intimate with each other. Okay? So then the question I would ask is why? As a Christian, how did you come to that conclusion? So now we're still – it's just the basic game plan. We're getting them to talk. The more they talk, the more it's on the table and the more that you get to work with in order to deal with that. So they say, well, Jesus taught love and the apostles taught love. What the Bible's all about is love. And my response to that is, how much have you read the Bible? That's a question. Because the Bible's not all about love. In fact, I have yet to do this, but every single time this question comes up, I remind myself I've got to do this when I get around to it. I got to get one of those round to it things, and I can do it. And that is go through the Gospels and just look at every place that Jesus talked about love, which is my sense right now, almost never. What? Oh, yeah, the two great commandments. Love God, love your neighbor. But you can't love your neighbor in a way that dishonors God. Because now you're not loving God, and that trumps the loving your neighbor. And in 1 Corinthians 13, Paul makes it really clear. Thank God for this passage. Love this, loves that, love the other thing, and love blah, 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 and all these wonderful things. You see it repeated in marriage ceremonies, and it should be. However, it also says love does not rejoice in unrighteousness. I think it says it, but rejoices in the truth. And of course, the truth that it's referring to in the context is the truth of moral truth. Okay, so those are the questions I would ask. Where did you get the idea in the Bible that you could do things the Bible says is wrong as long as you do them in a loving way? Okay, I got to write that down. Where do you get, I'll say it slowly, get the idea in the Bible that you can do, this is going in a book, something wrong, and of course here I mean biblically wrong, as long as you do it in a loving way. By the way, Jesus does say love one another. He's talking to disciples at the end of his ministry. I give you a new commandment. The Upper Room Discourse, he gives the new commandment to love one another, which means this has not been his emphasis. Now, I got to quantify this chapter and verse, but I encourage anybody, you go through the Gospels and read them quickly, kind of my speed read technique. Just go through, find where it talks about love. Isolate the passages and see what it says. You're not going to have many passages where Jesus is encouraging people to love one another. You're going to have, I promise you, okay, here's my, you are going to have five times more condemnations by Jesus of unrighteousness and unrighteous behavior as you're going to have of Jesus commending loving behavior. That's just my prediction. And by the way, I'm saying five because I think I'm going to be really safe there. Jesus was very condemning by today's standards. Just read it. Oh, well, the Sermon on the Mount. Oh, yeah? Have you ever read it? Read it. It does not paint a pretty picture. It tells people what they're supposed to do instead of what they're doing. He's condemning their behavior and telling them to live right. He's not saying, love is all you need. I almost went into a Beatles rendition there. This is a common misunderstanding. But again, I haven't quantified it myself. I'm just going based on my own assessment. But I'm going to have to write this book, to put this in the book I'm writing this year, if my publisher accepts the book proposal, I'm going to have to do that analysis.
So, Greg, I think you could take it even farther than just saying that Jesus talks about unrighteousness more than love, by saying that the unrighteousness is unloving. The whole reason for him talking about unrighteousness and calling people to be righteous is that when you are unrighteous, you are acting unloving. And I think of what Paul says in Romans 13, where he says that he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. The law is actually defining what love means. If we didn't know what love meant, how would we even know if we were acting in a loving way? So to assume that you can act in a, that you can call something loving, that goes against what God has revealed to be truly good, is to misunderstand what loving even means. So Greg, what would you take them also to Matthew 19, or to talk about what Jesus says about marriage?
Well, I mean, those are passages that could be said, but it's hard to believe that anyone who broadly claims to be a Christian is unaware of the biblical restrictions to sexual behavior. I mean, they're all over the place, you know, and not just in the Gospels, but in the letters too. Adulterers, let the marriage bed be undefiled in Hebrews, because fornicators and adulterers God will judge. 6:9, a whole list of sexual sins and others that say if you practice these things, you will not inherit the kingdom of God. In the letter to the churches that the Jerusalem Council sent out in Acts 15, they say to abstain from fornication. This is not a mystery. I mean, please, this is not a mystery. What people think is all of those injunctions can be abrogated in virtue of love. And
well, I think one way to draw that out could be if they actually say love is love, you might want to say, well, I'm curious, well, what do you mean by that? What if it's incest? What if they love each other? Are you saying that's okay? Well, they'll say no. So then you can ask them, what makes that not okay?
If love is love.
So there's something else that's helping you to understand what's okay. I'm just trying to figure out how you decide which love is okay and which love isn't okay.
Because what about adultery? Yeah.
Right. There's another example.
Yeah.
There's something else. Love is love means nothing. That's not their true point. So what you need to do is get to where their actual argument is.
Yeah.
Same-sex relationships are okay because... and then find out what's the answer for that. And it won't have anything to do with love is love.
Okay, so there's another question here. I'm writing this down too. Do you condemn sex outside of marriage? That's not an act of intimate love. Well, how about that? They're not going to do this. Having sex is an act of love, period, even if it's between strangers for half an hour and they're gone and there's money exchanging hands. It's still love to these people. That's my suspicion.
I actually think they will have clear boundaries, and perhaps they haven't even considered them, because love is such a slogan that people take on. Most people haven't really thought it through because they have this background information in their mind of what's acceptable and what isn't. So if you even bring up the idea of pedophilia or incest, they will be shocked, because they'll say, no, of course, that's not what I mean, because they've never actually thought about what is defining their boundaries.
Right, right.
They haven't
been
explicit.
What distinguishes one from the other biblically, mm-hmm. and that's the key, rather.
Right.
What distinguishes one one from the other biblically, because this is a concern by Christians. That's the way the question was asked. And so since we're talking about Christianity, we're inside of the faith, as it were. So, okay, now, if the Bible is a guide, you know, then the irony is, one of the things unique about the God of Israel is he cared about sexual purity. The rest of the gods didn't. They were sex gods. All these, it was just reading in Numbers, you know, and Balaam in Numbers led Israel astray to worship with the Baals and their sexual enterprises, you know. Their worship included sex.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah, so if you can draw them back to what really creates their boundaries, is it society's acceptance? Is it something in the Bible? And maybe they've never thought about it before. If they truly want to follow Christ, you might change their minds. I think a lot of people just have not thought carefully about any of this before because our society is so insistent about certain things and does a good job to get everybody to conform. So whatever you can do to help them think more clearly.
They don't think about it because they don't want to think about it. They want to do what they want to do. By the way, I completely sympathize with the impulse. This is a human impulse. But this is what separates virtue from vice and good character from bad character. You do the right thing for the right reasons. What was that wonderful movie, that Victorian movie about the gal who loved the guy and then the guy's house burned down and he went blind? And Emily Bronte.
Oh, Jane Eyre?
Jane Eyre. That is a great, because this is, she was in love with a guy who is married. Mm-hmm. Okay? And she said, no, it's not right. And she suffered sacrifice as a result of doing the right thing. And so get the movie. You don't have to read the book. Just get the movie. There's a couple of different iterations of it, and it's a great
message. It is a great book. I just listened to it on audiobook not too long ago after not hearing it for or reading it for decades, and it was wonderful. So, yeah, I agree with your recommendation. All right, we're out of time, Greg. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. You can send those questions to us on through the website, or you can send them on Twitter, and we look forward to hearing from you. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.